Thank you.
The next case is 05-970-971, Chemintec versus City of Fairlawn. Mr. Morrison.
May it please the court, counsel. The certified question that was presented to this panel by the Ninth District reads as follows. Does the availability of injunctive relief, if timely filed but denied, preclude an award of lost profits in a municipal contract case? The question answered yes. I think that that is a narrow question. I think there's a broader question that I would also invite this court to embrace, and that is, does the availability of injunctive relief in and of itself preclude an award of monetary damages in a municipal contract case? The case law that is cited throughout the appellant's brief clearly demonstrates that it has been the law of Ohio now for a long, long time that lost profits cannot be recovered on a contract unless a contract exists. In the case before this court, no contract ever existed. Consequently, there could never be lost profits. They would be speculative at best. Then we move to a quasi-contract theory. Again, the cases that are cited in the brief are known well throughout the state that a governmental entity cannot be held on a theory of quasi-contract or estoppel by virtue of their governmental nature. In this case, it was a municipality. Both of those notions, with great respect to the Ninth District Court of Appeals, were sidestepped in arriving at the result that the Ninth District arrived at in this case. The Ohio Supreme Court has stated that the whole notion of competitive bidding is designed to protect the taxpayers and not the bidders. In this case, the bidder is the one that would be protected by the ruling of the Ninth District Court of Appeals. In essence, the Ninth District Court of Appeals would allow the unsuccessful bidder to recover the profits that it would have made had it been the successful bidder. The only consequence of that is that the taxpayers have to foot the bill twice. Now, one could argue, well, as did the Ninth District in its decision, that there has to be some way of causing municipalities to comply with the law. That sounds to me like a form of punishment. This court has ruled, and it has long been the rules of the law in Ohio, that a governmental entity is not subject to punitive damages. So there are a number of notions that were ignored, again, with great respect to the Ninth District, in arriving at the conclusion of this in this case. I would submit to the court that the case of Cedar Bay, which is this Ohio Supreme Court decision that is cited by both parties, clearly indicates the purpose behind competitive bidding. Almost every court of appeals that has dealt with the issue in Ohio has ruled that the only available remedy for an unsuccessful bidder is an injunction. In this case, Cementec sought out an injunction that was denied. They chose not to appeal that. At the time the injunction was denied, they chose not to ask the court to expedite the calendar so that they could have a hearing on their preliminary and permanent injunction.
What, in your view, is the import of their failing to appeal the denial of that injunction?
Because, in my opinion, Your Honor, the appeal would have allowed, if the Ninth District had ruled on the appeal as they have in this appeal, would have allowed Cementec to either be awarded the contract or the project would have gone back out for rebid. As the court may recall, there was an issue with regard to Cementec's bid. It did not include 54 trees that were to be planted that was an addendum to the invitation to bid. And of course, that kind of gets lost in the shuffle at the time of trial because the trial focused on whether or not the law director had the right to look at a bid and say, you know, it didn't include the 54 trees, it's not a valid bid, and therefore it was not one of the bids considered. And of course, that goes to the notion of whether or not the municipality is presumed to have followed its own rules and regulations, and that there was and that the activity of the municipality was within its regulatory bounds. And there, this court has said on many occasions that deference is given to the municipality, that the courts will not substitute their judgment for the administrative bodies. In this case, again, with great respect to the Ninth District, that notion was lost. And instead, a jury, based upon a preponderance of the evidence, was to decide whether or not the city fairly complied with its own rules and regulations. The standard for an injunction is clear and convincing evidence. So we went from the clear and convincing evidence standard at the time the injunction was denied to a preponderance of the evidence standard at the time of trial.
Were these filed in the same suit, or were these two separate lawsuits filed by Symantec?
It was the same lawsuit, Your Honor. There was an
So they sought injunctive relief and damages.
Yes, they sought injunctive relief that was denied. They asked for a second hearing on the injunctive relief that was denied. They did not appeal that decision, waited several years.
If they were to appeal, what kind of a bond would they have been required to post?
Well, I believe that the case law is pretty clear that the court can fashion a bond giving due consideration, number one, of the size of the project, and secondly, due to the ability of the person to post a bond. In fact, the court has the ability to require no bond if the trial court so chooses. Now, of course, that could be an argument that one might argue in the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals could require the posting of a bond. But it is within the discretion of the court to decide how much the bond could be or should be. I'll answer any questions you have. Otherwise, I'm going to defer to the Attorney General on their argument for the amicus.
Thank you, Mr. Morrison. Ms. Bry.
Thank you. May it please the court, I'm Diane Bry here on behalf of Attorney General Petro as amicus curiae for the state of Ohio. The decision below is wrong for two reasons. First, it penalizes taxpayers, forcing taxpayers to pay damages in addition to the cost of paying for the work performed is contrary to the purpose of the competitive bidding statutes, as my co-counsel said a few moments ago. Second, injunctive relief is an adequate remedy for disappointed bidders. And most importantly, it protects the taxpayers' interest in low-cost public works projects as well. If any money damages remedy is to be created for disappointed bidders, it ought to be left to the General Assembly. First, the ruling below hurts taxpayers by having to pay a higher price for a public works project and then pay damages to the disappointed bidder. Local governments and state agencies enter into millions of dollars worth of construction contracts every year. The decision below will create an incentive for bidders to seek the lucrative damages remedy at the end of the case as a backup to injunctive relief claim instead of pressing for the most immediate decision on that injunctive relief claim.
Counsel, are you looking for us to for the city to win here, is it necessary for us to say that they must appeal when they lose a request for injunctive relief?
Yes, Your Honor, I would say it's necessary to appeal or pursue that injunctive relief claim to its conclusion. For example,
So let's say they appealed and they lost on appeal. Then it goes back, and it's ultimately determined that was wrong, and that they were the still no damages.
Well, Your Honor, if it were affirmed through all the levels of appeal, then it would be determined that they were not entitled to
relief. So that would be a bar to the second action for damages.
Yes, Your Honor, our position here is that there is no cause of action beyond injunctive relief because the right that is to be protected is the right of the public in low-cost public works projects. That's why we have competitive bidding statutes, and that's why we allow standing to disappointed bidders to that extent to protect that right.
There shouldn't even be an award of the bid preparation costs?
No, Your Honor, we think that there should not be any award of monetary damages here because there's a bidder who bids on a public works project, prepares the bid, it's part of the cost of doing business, and there's no reliance there, if you will, on being able to get the contract. In fact, even if a disappointed bidder in an injunction action wins, that doesn't guarantee he's eventually going to get the contract. The bid will be redone, and he may or may not get it. And so to award any damages, especially lost profits damages, is inherently speculative.
Appeals kind of to be effective would require the project not go forward, correct?
That's correct.
And that has a downside for the public agency or body as well, does it not?
To be sure, it does. But of course, on appeals of that nature where time is of the essence, parties often do request expedited consideration and stays and so forth so that it can be decided quickly. And if it is decided quickly, the injunctive relief then protects both the disappointed bidder and the taxpayer. Their interests are aligned so that the public doesn't have to pay too much for the project. And the bidder then, if it's determined that there was an abuse of discretion, there may be a rebid and a chance to compete for that work again.
Is the strongest legal argument here that there's no contract and therefore there can be no monetary damages for no breach of a contract, or is it this public policy argument that we shouldn't require public entities to pay twice for a project that's now complete?
Your Honor, both arguments are strong in this case. First, as you've noted, because there is no contract, a disappointed bidder, by definition, does not have a contract with the public entity. Simply submitted a bid, and it's established in Ohio laws and other states that a bid is simply an offer. So first of all, there is no contract. The whole basis in the Combs case and others for lost profits is based on anticipating lost profits at the time of a contract, and there is none here. But additionally, the policy behind the competitive bidding statutes, the purpose of those statutes to protect the public and to protect the public from paying twice, also is important here in showing why the decision below was incorrect.
When you look at the appellate court's concern over deterrence or of making sure that the city follows its procedures, when you describe the injunctive process, in a sense, we could look at that as a deterrent. If the process goes forward and an applicant is successful, there is a delay, so there is some downside to a city who does not follow its own bidding process, correct?
That's absolutely right, Your Honor. And in fact, the California Supreme Court in the case that we've cited recognizes that very incentive for governments to follow the law without a lost profit damage award. And I'd like to
Counsel, I'm curious about, seeking injunctive relief sounds like that's the way you ought to go, except that there's a real practical problem that Mr. Morrison tap-danced around very nicely, and that is just take this case. What would be the reasonable bond request from Fairlawn on this case?
Well, as Mr. Morrison said, normally you look at what the cost of the whole project is and the cost of any delay. You look at weather delays, things like that.
So the cost of the whole project, would that be the starting point for looking at a bond?
That would certainly be something the court would look at. That and I'm sure any arguments that the company would make on an ability to pay and so forth.
That would almost be an insurmountable hoop to cross for most contractors, wouldn't it?
I don't think so, Your Honor, and certainly not more than other parties in a situation where they need to appeal and post an appeal bond. That does frequently happen in our legal system where you need to go to a surety and get a surety bond to appeal and protect your rights in a timely fashion. So they're in no different position here than other parties
situation. Some appeals don't involve, the delay here can be very costly to the public body. So fashioning a remedy that actually works, as the Ninth District is worrying about, and I would assume the Attorney General has to worry about. You want your local governments and the state government to comply with competitive bidding, and we don't want to write something that just sort of gives them a free pass, that they can look at this and say, well, you know, we like Joe's bid better, so we're going to ignore that, and the cost of a bond will keep the losing bidder from ever battling beyond the trial level.
Your Honor, to address that, I disagree with that. I think, as Justice Lanziger pointed out, you have a lot of incentives on the part of the governments to comply with the law and not to mistreat bidders. Some of them are in the injunctive relief action themselves, and additionally, just having to rebid projects, that takes time and effort, and that's not something they're going to want to do. So the injunctive relief addresses those concerns by making sure that in the case where you've got a serious error, an abuse of discretion, a fairly high standard, that can be taken care of and done quickly so that it protects everyone's interests. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bry. Mr. Lanahan.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, I am David Lenihan and I represent Symantec. Symantec urges this court to affirm the well-reasoned position of law set forth by the Ninth Appellate District. That proposition of law protects the integrity of the bid process and ensures that wrong parties will receive real relief and meaningful remedies as guaranteed by Article 1, Section 6.
Mr. Lenihan, I guess the question that I didn't find answered in your brief and maybe we're all wondering is, why was there no appeal taken from the denial of the injunction?
The reason why there was no appeal taken for the denial of that is that, number one, it, for all practical purposes, would be an impossibility, because they would be arguing, while the project is being completed by somebody else, they would be arguing for the largest bond possible. That would create an insurmountable task to any bidder that they now have to come up with, and in this case, a $600,000 bond, in order to ensure that a stay would be instituted.
We're writing law here, and how do we know what they would have requested? I mean, is that the answer to not, the injunction is not a deterrent here? Is that the bond is going to be too high?
Well, Chief Justice, if you're writing law and you're saying that you must go ahead and then appeal that, and that is your only remedy and recourse, you don't have then any other remedy with respect to the trial court in proving anything differently. So if your remedy is that you can only get injunctive relief and therefore must push up that side of the equation, I think that foregoes the fact that the city should be treated like any other litigant, that where there is a restraining order that's rejected, that the rest of the case can proceed nonetheless.
If you were successful on the injunction, that still did not guarantee you a contract, did it? They had the right to go back and rebid it, and you could still lose the contract if all the proper procedures were followed.
You're absolutely right, Chief Justice Stratton. And Symantec had asked the city to do that. To right their wrongs, they should just rebid the project. They chose not to do that. They maintained steadfast that what they did was right, despite the fact that what ended up being proved was that they abused their power, their discretion, acted arbitrary and capriciously.
But again, if we have to write law for other cases, if we say that you automatically get lost profits when there's no guarantee you would have even gotten a contract, that doesn't seem to have a logical legal following.
I would submit that it does, in that as the three cases that have been cited by the appellant, the Hard Drives, the Kavanaugh, and the Midwest Services, you must proceed with injunctive relief as a prerequisite to going to the next stage as to whether or not you could get monetary damages. In Midwest Services, they didn't even ask for injunctive relief, and the Court of Appeals rejected them on any pursuit. With respect to Kavanaugh asked for it but never pursued it. They had it as part of their pleadings but never pursued it. Symantec, on the other hand, had it in both their complaint as well as a separate motion, and then when that was denied after hearing, they filed it a second time. Symantec has been diligent. The difference with Hard Drives' case, Hard Drives had asked for it but proved that was rejected, went up to the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals agreed that the city abused its discretion. However, hard drives, like the mechanical contractor's case, never proved that they were the lowest and best bid. And that's what Symantec ended up proving. Despite the fact that they can claim a defect in the bid, at the trial level, we proved that indeed it was the lowest and best bid, contained all material aspects of it. When we submitted the bid on the table, the city could have accepted it and bound Symantec by it. Indeed, if Symantec didn't accept the contract at that time, they would have forfeited their bid bond, which typically in most cases is 10%. So in this case, it would have been $60,000. So while a contractor puts his bid on the table with the expectation of the promise that if they are indeed the lowest and best bidder, they will enter into the contract, if they refuse to do that, the city can take their bid bond in the amount of $60,000. For the same reasons, the city has to reciprocate, and there needs to be mutuality in that if they violate their promise, and their promise, even though the appellant claims they don't make this promise to follow the law, if they promise to follow the law and award the contract to the lowest and best bidder, then indeed Symantec would receive that contract. And only if the only remedy with respect to your question with respect to an appeal is not that they would get a contract, but only that the award to that particular low bidder would be enjoined. What happens after that, I don't know. Whether or not it's rebid or whether it's actually given back to then Symantec, who would have been the lowest and best bidder, would be the more likely scenario. In the end, Symantec would have and should have gotten that bid.
My understanding is that the trial court based its liability decision on the fact the engineer didn't have proper authority. Is that correct?
No. The trial court, and it's kind of an interesting issue because at the hearing, the city maintained that they had the authority to do what they did, and Symantec claimed that indeed the law director did not have the authority to do what he did in rejecting the bid. And there was a lot of fact issues with respect to what the law director ended up doing, rejecting the bid an hour after bid opening, telling the engineer not to even put Symantec's name on the bid list that it had submitted a bid, and all other things. But at the trial court, the court listened to the other arguments put forth by the city that their board of audit and review reviewed it and still rejected it, that their legislative body, the city council, still reviewed it nonetheless. And I'll tell you, even honestly, after the fact, the jury disregarded what the law director did and still found that the procedures that were in place by the city of Fair Lawn did not meet the minimum requirements that they should have had.
Okay, but then again, getting back to my question of there's no guarantee you have gotten the contract. There doesn't seem to be any dispute that you left out the 54 trees, and so if they went back and looked at all the contracts following all the proper procedures, you might still not have won the bid because of the leaving the trees out. So your bid's not complete.
The bid did include the trees. At no time did the scope of work ever change. That issue was argued at the trial court level. Symantec said all along the bid included the 54 trees. The only thing that changed was an addendum with respect to a line item for the trees. But the actual trees that were required under the contract were required on the initial blueprints of that drawings. Symantec, when it put its bid on the table, it included the 54 trees. In fact, the jury members, when they fashioned their monetary award, put down the fact $25.54 or $54.25 because it was note 25 in the general blueprint plans that the trees were required, and they were the 54 trees. With respect to whether or not we are guaranteed the bid, absolutely we're guaranteed the bid. Ohio Revised Code 735.05 requires that the city shall award a bid to the lowest and best bidder. We were guaranteed by Ohio Revised Code that if we submitted the lowest and best bid, we were going to get that contract. This is a case of competing public policies. On one hand, you have that monies for taxpayers should go towards projects. On the other hand, you have other policies that the Ninth Appellate Court weighed in. And I would submit to you that the Ninth Appellate District weighed all of the policies, unlike the other three cases, with respect to hard drives, Kavanaugh, and Midwest Services. Those policies are protecting the integrity of the bid system so that there is no license to ignore the law. And that's for all three parties who are part of the bid system, whether it's the taxpayers, the bidders, or the government entity themselves. We need to protect the integrity of the bid system. Additionally, the policy of ensuring that wrong parties receive meaningful relief. There's no Pyrrhic victory here. If you're going to win, you're going to win. And you have to have something. And while the injunctive relief was a remedy at one point, the minute it became a moot issue, you're left with no other remedy but money damages. The other public policy is to ensure that government entities take responsibility for their actions. They follow the law and are held accountable. There's no immunity here for a city to get a free pass, that they can skirt the laws and just say, catch me if you can, because knowing full well that at the end of the day, what are you going to get? Money damages in the form of just bid preparation costs. And although I would submit to you that the fact that the amici for the appellant claims that bid preparation costs shouldn't even be included, that issue wasn't even properly perfected. They never appealed that issue at the first appellate court when we were awarded that. And now they're trying to bootstrap that as an argument after the fact. That's simply not the case. Keep in mind that there's very limited times that money damages would be awarded to a bidder. And that clearly outweighs any bright line rule that a city can flagrantly violate the laws as they did here and go ahead and play catch me if you can. It's just simply not the case. There's a few other arguments that were put forth by the appellant and its amici that I think warrant some comments, because nearly every argument put forth by them is either a misstatement or a myth or some fear. They claim that, oh, this will encourage bidders to delay so that damages. No, it doesn't. This bidders have to go and try to get that injunctive relief. And it's only then, without any delay or any fault on their part, if it's denied or wrongfully denied, can you then get monetary damages. This is not going to encourage bidders to not seek injunctive relief in the first place. They claim that the Cementec bid was defective. That's a fact issue that was determined by the court. It wasn't defective. It contained all material aspects, and not only was it a proper bid, it was the best bid, which is a qualitative subjective standard that isn't second-guessed too regularly, and deference is given to the cities. But despite all that deference, they still were found to have acted arbitrarily in rejecting that particular bid. Another argument they claim is that, well, this will just be money that protects the bidders. This money just doesn't protect the bidders. This is going to protect taxpayers. In the long run, taxpayers will benefit, because in the long run, they're going to get projects completed at lower costs. More likely than not, they're not going to go to the second bidder anymore. They're going to save money over time and time again. And I can tell you, I know firsthand after this case, there's been instances of where, in fact, the cities have benefited because, in fact, they haven't gone with the second bidder or the third bidder as they may have wanted.
Council, the award of damages beyond the cost of submitting the bid, the theory for that is based on the statute, because you don't have a contract.
The theory is based on promissory estoppel, not a contract theory. That promissory estoppel, which the mechanical contractors case cited pretty well, that you're entitled to it based upon that reliance that the city is going to enter into a contract with you.
And the award of those damages in this case has not yet occurred.
That is correct, Justice Pfeiffer. We still need to go back and prove all of the requirements as to whether or not you're even entitled to any money.
And did you proffer or do?
Yes, Justice,
what's
we did.
The level?
Yes, we proffered in this particular case $80,000 in lost profits. And before that, we had given the opposing counsel, as part of the measure of damage issue, the whole breakdown on where the damages are. But you still have to go back and determine whether or not you mitigated your damages. Could you have gotten another contract at that same time? Maybe you're not entitled to any monies. There's still the three-part test as to whether or not you should even get any money.
So we're fighting about an important principle to contractors and to cities here. The money involved is less than the attorney fees that are being expended.
Yes. And that's important, because cities just can't get away with violating the law. There needs to be, even if it's just a proportion of the monies that these contractors can recoup in following through with the legal process, that's better than nothing, because at the end of the day, the taxpayers will benefit in the long run. And if you deny any money relief at all or limit it in any way, the taxpayers will end up losing in the long run.
Okay.
Because then they'll just go on.
And some contracts involve huge amounts of money. They're very complex, and the issue of what's the lowest, is it lowest and best or just lowest for the statute?
It depends if it's a city bid or a statewide bid. It's lowest and best or lowest and most responsive, depending. In this case, it's lowest and best versus the lowest, most responsive.
The and best can make it all problematic, can't it?
Yes, and I will submit to you that subsequent to the Symantec decision, the cities have put forth their best efforts to, if they want to reject the bids, they'll go on the qualitative standpoint of the best part, not on the other part of it as they did in this case.
All right. Well, I think there are valid concerns raised on both sides, but we also have to be thinking about protecting the bid process, making sure it's followed as you're arguing, but also not setting up a new cottage industry for lawyers representing.
I think one of the amici, Justice Pfeiffer, on behalf of Symantec, said it pretty well, that we have a better chance of winning the Powerball and getting what Symantec got in this case than we would otherwise. This is not going to set up a cottage industry. These are very limited circumstances. A handful of times, if that, where you jump through so many hoops that the city breaks the law, that you are the lowest and best, and on and on and on, that injunctive relief is no longer available, that the city actually then perform the project instead of themselves holding back, waiting to see what happens. I see that I'm nearly out of time, and I'll just say that Symantec has already won, regardless of the decision here today. They've proved everything, but now I think it's time to put teeth into it a little bit so that the system is maintained.
Thank you, Mr. Linehan.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Morrison, you've gone over your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Yes, thank you. If I may, please, I want to respond to a couple of things. First of all, the Council for Symantec has suggested that Hard Drives, Kavanaugh, and Midwest recognized that there could be a claim for money damages, but that the money damage claims were withdrawn. I think that's absolutely incorrect. All three of those cases clearly say that injunctive relief is the sole remedy for an unsuccessful bidder. I would also suggest to the court that the comment made by counsel that since the Symantec decision, municipalities and other governmental bodies are now relying more on the lowest as opposed to the best and most responsible in their bid process. In fact, the Symantec case, if it's doing exactly what counsel has said it's doing, it's chilling what cities and municipalities and other governmental entities are doing in what has been a longstanding bid process of not only looking at the lowest, but the best or most responsive. And I believe that, in fact, it does create a cottage industry that, after the fact, contractors can second guess, and whether it's against Ohio State University or a hospital system somewhere, it may not be $80,000. It could be millions and millions and millions
of dollars. Well, counsel, I thought I also understood him to say that after this case, municipalities and others were being more careful if it was they considered someone to have the superior bid in terms of quality, to define that in terms of rejecting the lower bid, to spend more time specifying why the award is to the best bidder instead of past practices. So they're giving some definition to.
I understand what the court has said. I just obviously, if in fact we are now looking at lowest and weighing that more than best or responsible or responsive, then there's a concern that the taxpayers are going to end up.
Well, what happened here, though? Did the city reject it because it was not the best?
In this case, the city rejected it based upon the law director's determination that the addendum, which was an additional part of the contract that Symantec admittedly received, was not included in their bid documents, and therefore the bid was not complete.
And ultimately, he was determined to be wrong on that.
Yes, by preponderance of the evidence, which again, as I've indicated to the court and we've cited in our brief, flies in the face of the deference that is to be given to administrative bodies and municipalities in interpreting and applying their own statutes and rules.
Mr. Morrison, what is your response to Mr. Linehan's assertion that appealing a denial of an injunction is not adequate here? That what is?
With great respect to counsel, I clearly disagree with that. In this case, based upon what, hindsight's always 20/20, based upon what we now see that the Ninth District Court of Appeals did after the jury verdict, if this matter had been presented to the Court of Appeals on the appeal of the denial of the injunction, they would have looked at the same factual scenario. They would have given either, this goes back to the whole theory of reliance and promissory estoppel, they would have either directed the city of Fairlawn to give Cement Tech the contract or to rebid the contract. On rebid, there's no guarantee Cement Tech's going to get anything. The fact is, no appeal was taken, Your Honor.
That would assume that there was a stay.
Yes.
The problem here, of course, is that the project is complete, and so we're looking at what do we do? How do we unravel?
Your Honor, I can only draw from my experience that there have been many times in my experience where you go over, you seek a TRO, you at the same time ask for an expedited hearing on your preliminary and permanent injunction. The courts, in my experience, are receptive to that, and they will set it down very quickly. I'm talking about within a 30-day period. Depending upon whether the injunction is granted or denied, an appeal is taken up. Again, we often approach the courts and ask them, because of the urgency of the matter, to expedite the appeal. And in this case, as Justice Pfeiffer asked me about the bonding issue, if a trial court on a TRO preliminary permanent injunction is inclined to believe that Cement Tech would prevail, the court can adjust the bond accordingly. They can require no bond. If they grant a TRO, preliminary injunction, and permanent injunction, therein the court has determined, the trial court has determined, that you're going to prevail at the end of the day. I would submit to the court that under those circumstances, there would be no bond required of the person that prevailed.
Well, that's your speculation. Mr. Linehan has his speculation that
right.
It's going to be this high bond. So I guess we can't write the law based upon what the bond may be.
I agree.
Mr. Morrison, could I ask you a question?
Yes,
what do you base your statement on that the trees were not included in the bid? Mr. Linehan strongly disputes that. Where in the record could I find the evidence to support your contention?
Your Honor, I believe that the documents that were part of the trial, with great respect, I did not try the case in the trial court. So I believe.
But you told us that the trees were not included in the bid.
That's right. There was an addendum sent out.
What do you base that on?
Based upon my review of the bid documents, and so I have seen the bid documents, but I didn't try the case in the trial court, so I can't tell you what exhibit they were, etc. And I don't want to mislead the court. There was an addendum sent out that dealt with these 54 pear trees. All of the other bidders included it. Cement Tech did not. Then after the fact, Cement Tech said, oh, no, we included those trees in our bid.
Thank you.
The law director, with great respect to him, suggested that it was not included in
Thank
their
you.
Bid.
You've used your time, Mr. Morrison.
Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.